RSC.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Well, coming up in this hour, we're going to hear the continuation of Democracy Now! From earlier, and then we're going to hear probably one of the most talked about speeches that we've carried recently. We're going to hear a talk by Chris Hedges on the far right and why it's rearing its head now in the country. We're also fundraising here at WMNF, and we're going to take a few minutes, every 20 minutes or so, and ask for donations to keep this radio station on the air, this listener-sponsored radio station on the air. And let me just check in and see if Sean Canaan is there. Sean, are you there? Okay, we haven't made the connection here, but we're going to get Sean on in just a moment. So, congratulations to Talking Animals. They did really well during the last hour. The 4 hours of public affairs here on WMNF on Wednesday, we need to raise $10,000. That's the goal set by the station's development director. It's a huge goal. This hour, we have to hear from about 40 people to stay on track, and a bunch of people called during Democracy Now!. Diane Howe made a $100 contribution, taking the WMNF face mask. And Irene Bembry from Tampa made a $50 contribution. Irene, thank you very much. Michael Phillips from Waimama has made a $300 contribution. Michael, thanks. That's big. And Kimberly from St. Petersburg, an $88.50 donation. Thank you, Kimberly. Rebecca from Largo has made a $50 contribution and says that she is 100% behind you guys and never wants to see us go away. Rick and Diane Kugler from Tampa made a $20 contribution. Paul and Gail Carroll from Clearwater, I've heard their name already today, but Paul and Gail, thanks a lot for that $50 contribution. And this is for Midpoint with MNF News on Wednesday. So thanks, Paul and Gail. And also, Paul and Gail made a $107.50 donation for Radioactivity. So Paul and Gail, thank you. And Susie Fox from Bradenton has made a $200 contribution. And thanks to Anonymous and Nokomis for a $50 contribution. Thank you. Well, we are just 40 calls away from reaching the goal. As promised, we are going to hear Democracy Now!, the last part of the Democracy Now! Program, in which law professor Samuel Moyne talks about how to make the Supreme Court more democratic. We're here part of Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, his comments yesterday during the Barrett confirmation hearings, in which he talked about dark money influencing the judicial selection process. And we know that a lot of people think that there are too many dark money groups helping in or steering people to the courts, both the federal court level, the appeals court level, and also the Supreme Court level. Amy Goodman is promising to have an interview with Sheldon Whitehouse later on this week, so I'm looking forward to that. But let's listen to more of Democracy Now! Right now. And as we listen to it, remember, your donation keeps great programs like this on the air. Again, our phone number is 813-238-8001. You can make a contribution there. You can also make your contribution online on our secure website at WMNF.org. That's WMNF.org. And in order to stay on track, we're going to need to hear from at least 40 people this hour. I know we can do it. Here's the rest of Democracy Now!
This is Democracy Now!, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to look at the Republican race to confirm President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, prior to Election Day. If confirmed to fill Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat, Barrett will give conservatives a 6-3 advantage on the court. It would also mean the majority of the justices on the court were selected by presidents that did not win the popular vote. We're joined now by legal scholar Samuel Moyne, who has a new piece in the New Republic headlined Making the Supreme Court Safe for Democracy. Beyond packing schemes, we need to diminish the high court's power. He's a professor of jurisprudence at Yale Law School, a professor of history at Yale University as well. Well, if you can talk about the history of the Supreme Court, you talk about as a reactionary one in U.S. history, and what needs to be done, Professor Moyne.
It's nice to be with you. You know, this country was founded on minority rule and the rejection of democracy, and the Supreme Court has long been a part of that picture. And now that the right is on the brink of establishing control It's a dangerous institution, and that's long been the case. We're seeing the charade, the familiar drill in Washington. The reason it's happening is because immense power to control the future of the country has been placed in the hands of 9 elected justices in the first place. And so no wonder there's Armageddon every time someone dies or retires. Maybe that's what we ought to think about changing.
Well, Professor, I wanted to ask you, in terms of this history, there is a series of court decisions that involve basically sanctioning conquest and the grabbing of imperial territories, whether it's the insular cases in the early 1900s or the under the Justice John Marshall Court, a series of decisions, the Marshall Trilogy on the relationship of Native Americans to the federal government as wards, essentially, of the federal government. None of this, however, is ever really discussed in these hearings in terms of this is settled, supposedly, decisions that are clearly unjust but have never really been raised to new Supreme Court nominees. Could you expound a little bit more about this historic reactionary nature of the court?
So really, from the beginning of the Republic, the court has been on board with the expulsion or extermination of Native peoples, as you pointed out, with American empire at the end of the 19th and the early 20th century. The striking legacy, even after the abolition of slavery, which of course the Supreme Court also supported before the Civil War, was the court's complicity with the rule of the wealthy, especially in the first Gilded Age, during that same later 19th and early 20th century. And Franklin Roosevelt had to face down the court, confront it, precisely for the reason that it was an institution of minority rule. Thomas Jefferson actually warned at the very beginning of our republic that his enemies were fleeing into the judiciary and treating it as a stronghold from which they could rule no matter what the people wanted. And now in our second Gilded Age, we've been seeing that same phenomenon for decades, even before the current confirmation battle, even before Mitch McConnell's hijinks, even when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a justice, the court was the most business-friendly court in a century. And so we have to understand that, as you point out, the long-term role of this court in our history.
So, in essence, what you're saying is that the period, let's say, of the Warren Court was really an anomaly in terms of at least liberalism on social and racial issues, but that the court essentially has been the trump card of the corporate elite of America in terms of maintaining its power.
That's largely right. The Earl Warren's court was anomalous and brief, and sadly, it didn't get a lot done, especially after decades of pushback and reaction. We should also remember that some of the basic work that cases like Brown v. Board did was sort of undoing the Supreme Court's collusion with the end of Reconstruction in 1877 and the unholy deal to let the South return to apartheid. And so it did do some valuable work. It's not clear we should be depending on a high court to do our democratic work for us. And so the basic rights we care about, we ultimately need to depend on convincing fellow citizens and entrenching our progressive ideals. And for that, only a mass movement suffices, not getting our friends in high places.
And when the Republicans talk now, they've already created the narrative that if Democrats come to power in the White House and the Senate, they will seek to pack the court. When in reality, I guess what you're saying is that the court is already packed. The question is, and under Mitch McConnell, it's become even more packed. The question is, how can it be unpacked or democratized? And I'm wondering if you could talk about what you would see as the most achievable, not necessarily the reforms that would that you would prefer the most, but which would be the ones most achievable, given that Democrats themselves, if they do come to power, will be fighting among themselves about the best type of reform?
So progressives have a menu of options, and they can order lots of things off the menu to press the Democrats, especially if Joe Biden wins and the Senate changes hands. Court packing isn't out of the question. It depends on, you know, what's done. If you put two new liberal justices up there, though, you're just restoring the status quo ante Neil Gorsuch, which was already intolerable. So, you know, our proposal is that you think about ways of limiting the court's power to interfere with Democratic legislation, as is happening with the Affordable Care Act. Once again, we shouldn't allow an institution that can mess over a decade in cooperation with the, you know, dark money funded conservative litigants with some of our, you know, most progressive laws. So if an H.R. 1 is passed, if a Green New Deal statute is passed, we can do things like insulate those laws from scrutiny by the federal judiciary. You know, if we dream big, we can do things like insist that judges can only invalidate federal legislation by supermajorities, so that it's not up to five conservatives, now six, to invalidate laws that millions support at very high levels of popularity. So what if we required a 7-2 or 8-1 or unanimous decision from the Supreme Court, which would make sure it's only finding values in the Constitution that everyone agrees about?
Samuel Moyne, if you could talk about the solution that Harvard Law School professor James Bradley Thayer offered to the problems posed by the Supreme Court, how he attempted to make judicial power safe for democratic self-rule.
So Thayer was responding to the end of Reconstruction, when the Supreme Court gutted the attempt after the Civil War to help African Americans, not just release them from chattel slavery, but give them equal citizenship. And he saw the court in a case called the Civil Rights Cases destroy some of Congress's attempts to create freedom and equality in this country. And when he saw that, he said that the justice should not be allowed to invalidate legislation unless it's really clear that it violates the Constitution. And so he called for self-restraint. And in particular, he said that there has to be a clear error. It's not that the judges get to second guess the legislature, because the legislature also has a view about what the Constitution allows and what's compatible with it. Rather, it's the judges should only invalidate laws when they're just crazy. Now, for a while, once FDR faced down the court in 1937, the Supreme Court adopted Thayer's rule and engaged in self-restraint. But that's eroded over time, actually in part because of liberal justices, but also in more recent times, conservative justices. So I think we need to retrieve Thayer's idea that the court has to be made safe for democracy, but not just rely on self-restraint, the judge's promises never to interfere again. And so if we do have to confront the court once again, we should be inspired by the old example that Thayer provides, but make sure and learn from his mistakes. We have to change the institution so that it's not up to judges to engage in self-restraint. We should restrain the judges so that they can't act.
And one of the things that you've noted is obviously, as people live longer today than they did back in the 19th or early 20th century, and the justices that get on the court stay longer. What about this issue of limiting the terms of Supreme Court justices?
Term limitation is a great idea. It's a kind of basic reform that a lot of people agree about. Ro Khanna introduced a bill. The trouble with most of the forms of term limitation that we've seen are that they're prospective. So The current justices will be grandfathered, or in Barrett's case, grandmothered in. And I just don't think we can wait that long. The country is on fire. And the best hope for progressive change is from the Congress, not from the judiciary, which will not save us. And so just limiting terms is an obvious fix, but it's not enough of a fix. Not least because in the end, the problem is not who is serving on the court or how long they get to stay. It's the power they have, and we need to curtail it.
We want to thank you so much, Samuel Moyen, professor of jurisprudence at Yale's Law School and professor of history at Yale University. We'll link to your piece in the New Republic, Making the Supreme Court Safe for Democracy. And that does it for our show.
Yeah, you've been listening to Democracy Now! Here on WMNF in Tampa. In just a moment, we're going to hear one of the most talked about speeches that we've ever played here on WMNF. So stick around. And thanks to Amy Goodman for doing the good work that she's done since 1996 on Democracy Now! I'm Rob Lori. Sean Canan is on the phone, and we're going to try to raise some money. Sean, we're going to just take 2 minutes and try to raise, during this hour, we've got to get 40 donations. It seems a little daunting, especially because we haven't had our first phone call yet. But I know people are tuned in, and I know people are looking forward to the speech we're about to hear. Let's see if we can get some donations right now for Radioactivity and for Democracy Now! The number where you can make your financial contribution is 813-238-8001. You can also make your contribution online really easily. Go to our website, WMNF.org, and you're keeping this radio station that brings you so many interesting ideas, thoughtful people that largely you're not going to see on TV tonight if you go and watch the cable news. And largely you're seeing and hearing, rather, people who have brilliant things to say, but they're being left out of the national debate. And that's why you listen to WMNF. Now, occasionally you hear investigative reporters from the New York Times and the Washington Post and the New Yorker on this program, too. And we're glad that people from the more mainstream media are on this program. But we got to get at least 40 donations this hour. The number to call, 813-238-8001. And we've got a challenge. If we get five $100 donations, we'll get a match of $500 from one of our great listeners. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob, and I'm really excited to be able to thank the listeners who call in right now and support the great programming that we bring you on Radioactivity, the excellent shows that Amy Goodman brings every single weekday morning on Democracy Now! We know that you can get analysis about the Supreme Court nominee pretty much anywhere. I mean, every single news outlet is covering it, but we think that Democracy Now!'s analysis of the Amy Coney Barrett hearings and the issues about the Supreme Court is worth supporting. We think that it's so good, it's so important, for that it's worth your financial support. Okay, we all support it, and we hope that you do too. Can you make a donation of $10 a month or $5 a month and support Democracy Now!, support Radioactivity, support all of WMNF by calling 813-238-8001 or making a secure donation on our website, WMNF.org.
And Sean, we're going to get to that speech right now. This is a speech from Chris Hedges, who's a former New York Times journalist. He's covered wars around the world, and he's written several books. He's been a guest here on WMNF several times. And Chris Hedges has a new talk about the growing power of the right wing in the U.S. and why we should be concerned. I'm sure a lot of people are concerned about it, but Chris tells you how it has become such a big problem in our country. Please call us at 813-238-8001. Help this radio station stay on the air, the radio station that really speaks truth to power, and make that contribution online at WMNF.org. And we're looking for five $100 donations in the next few minutes, and if we get five of them, we'll get an extra $500. We haven't gotten those donations yet. Nobody has called in. If you love Democracy Now!, if you love Midpoint, if you love Radioactivity, please make that contribution right now at 813-238-8001. Sean, let's hear that speech. I'm a little bit worried because nobody's calling. I don't know. This could be not good. But we've got here is the speech by Chris Hedges.
Trump's disdain for facts and truth, his penchant for magical thinking, along with his embrace of conspiracy theories, mesh seamlessly with the worldview of the Christian right. Trump, like the Christian right, sees himself as under attack from the media, academia, the liberal establishment, Hollywood, and the Democratic Party.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on Trump and the Christian right. Talk about an odd couple, the 45th president and the Christian right. For the president, renowned for his wayward ways, the support from some of the mega churches and their high priests form a key part of his base. According to a Pew poll, over 80% of white evangelicals said they will vote for the current occupant of the Oval Office. The Christian right looks the other way when confronted with the facts. For them, it's all about opposing same-sex marriage and abortion, funding religious-based schools, ensuring right-wing judges are appointed, and embracing nationalism, militarism, and imperialism. There's enough hypocrisy to fill many bookshelves. Just see Jerry Falwell Jr. Sometimes it's hard to keep the faith. Our guest today is Chris Hedges. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. He spoke at Colgate University in Hamilton, New York, in late February 2020. And now, Chris Hedges.
The greatest moral failing of the liberal Christian church was its refusal, made in the name of tolerance and dialogue, to denounce the followers of the Christian right as heretics. By tolerating the intolerant, it ceded religious legitimacy to an array of con artists, charlatans, and demagogues, and their cultish supporters. It stood by as the core message of the Christian gospel, concern for the poor and the oppressed, was perverted into a magical world where God and Jesus showered believers with material wealth and power. The white race, especially in the United States, became God's chosen agent. Imperialism and war became divine instruments for purging the world of infidels and barbarians, evil itself. Capitalism, because God blessed the righteous with wealth and power and condemned the immoral to poverty and suffering, became shorn of its inherent cruelty and exploitation. Rational and scientific inquiry, because it conflicts with the movement's mythology and warped religious ideology and conspiracy theories, is attacked and rejected. The condemnations of Muslims as satanic, of Christians who do not subscribe to the prosperity gospel as nominal Christians, of non-believers as damned, of those in our criminal caste, mostly poor people of color, as morally depraved and deserving of harsh sentences, including the death penalty, and the branding of the GBLT community as sick. Deny whole peoples their dignity and their legitimate right to be. I spent 2 years researching the Christian right. I traveled across the country, spending time in mega churches, creationist seminars, right to life retreats, and even took a course taught by D. James Kennedy in Florida called Evangelism Explosion. I conducted a few hundred interviews, and I met many evangelicals of goodwill and good intentions. But I came away believing that the leadership of the Christian right cruelly manipulates the despair of its followers and poses a danger to our open society. Dr. James Luther Adams, my ethics professor at Harvard Divinity School, told us that when we were his age, he was then close to 80, we would all be fighting the Christian fascists. The warning, given to me more than three decades ago, came in a moment Pat Robertson, another radio and televangelist, began speaking about a new political religion that would direct its efforts at taking control of all institutions, including mainstream denominations, and finally the government. Its stated goal was to use the United States to create a global Christian empire. It was hard at the time to take such fantastic rhetoric seriously, especially given the buffoonish quality of those who expounded it. But Adams warned us against the blindness caused by intellectual snobbery. The fascists, he said, were not going to return with swastikas and brown shirts. Their ideological heirs would wrap fascism in the Christian cross and the American flag and hold mass recitations of the Pledge of Allegiance. Adams was not a man to use the word fascist lightly. He was in Germany in 1935 and 1936 and worked with the underground anti-Nazi church known as the Confessing Church, led by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Adams was eventually detained, interrogated by the Gestapo, and expelled from Germany. He left on a night train with framed portraits of Adolf Hitler placed over the contents inside his suitcase to hide the rolls of home movie film he took of the so-called German Christian Church, which was pro-Nazi, and the few individuals who defied them, including the theologians Karl Barth and Albert Schweitzer. The ruse worked when the border police lifted the top of the suitcases, saw the portraits of the Führer, and closed them up again. I watched hours of the grainy black and white films as he narrated in his apartment in Cambridge. Adams saw in the Christian right, long before we did, disturbing similarities with the German Christian Church, similarities that he said would, in the event of prolonged social instability accompanied by economic decline, see American fascists, under the guise of religion, rise to dismantle the open society. He despaired of liberals, who, he said, as in Nazi Germany, mouthed platitudes about dialogue and inclusiveness that made them ineffectual and impotent. Liberals, he said, did not understand the power and allure of evil, nor the cold reality of how the world worked. Like Bonhoeffer, he did not believe that those who would fight effectively in coming times of turmoil, a fight that for him was a fundamental part of the biblical call, would come from the church or the liberal secular elite. Adams told us to watch closely what the Christian right did to ethnic and religious minorities, as well as those who did not adhere to rigid sexual stereotypes. He watched the Nazis use moral, quote-unquote, values to launch state repression of opponents. Hitler, days after he took power in 1933, imposed a ban on all homosexual and lesbian organizations. He ordered raids on places where homosexuals gathered, culminating with the ransacking of the Institute for Sexual Science in Berlin. Thousands of volumes from the Institute's library were tossed into a bonfire. The assault was cheered by the German churches. Adams said that the GBLTQ community, Muslims, immigrants, and poor people of color would be the first deviants singled out by the Christian right, but we would be the next. I remember thinking his warning was perhaps too apocalyptic. But nearly four decades later, the power brokers in the Christian right have moved from the fringes of society to the floor of the House of Representatives and the Senate, the White House, the judiciary, and major government departments. FRC Action, the legislative affiliate of the Family Research Council, gave 245 members of Congress a perfect 100% for votes that support the agenda of the Christian right. The Family Research Council, which called on its followers to pray for God to vanquish the demonic, that's their quotes, forces behind Trump's impeachment, is identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group because of its campaigns to discriminate against the LGBTQ community. Trump has elevated members of the Christian right to prominent positions of power, including Mike Pence to the vice presidency, Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, Ben Carson as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, William Barr as Attorney General, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, and the tele-evangelist Paula White, who promises her donors their own personal angel, to his Faith and Opportunities Initiative. Frank Amadia, the Trump campaign's liaison for Christian policy, claims to have raised an aunt from the dead. And the Christian right, which makes up as much as a quarter of the country, or close to 80 million people, has its own version of the brown shirts, the four higher mercenary armies and private contractors amassed by people such as Eric Prince, the brother of Betsy DeVos. Reason, science, facts, and verifiable truth are useless weapons against this belief system. I think the Christian right is best understood as what anthropologists will call a crisis cult. Crisis cults arise in most collapsing societies. They promise through magic to recover the lost grandeur of a mythologized past. This magical thinking banishes doubt, anxiety, and feelings of disempowerment. Traditional social hierarchies and rules, including white male supremacy, will be restored. Those blamed for our decline, intellectuals, artists, liberals, immigrants, undocumented workers, poor people of color, feminists, will be disempowered. America, freed from the contamination of these quote-unquote degenerate forces, will be restored. The Christian right propagates its magical thinking through a selective biblical literalism.
Yeah, we're going to hear more of this talk from Chris Hedges in just a moment. We're fundraising here at listener-sponsored WMNF in Tampa. Sean Canan is on the phone, and Daniel Figueroa IV is here in the studio with me, the rest of the news team, and we're going to try to raise some money. Thanks to the great people at Chef Suzanne and Cass Street Deli. Cass Street Deli is located at 1331 West Cass Street in Tampa. They've sent individually prepared sandwiches, coleslaw, pickles and chips, and boxed lunches for the volunteers and staff here today. And we're very happy to have their continued support. So thanks to Chef Suzanne and the Cass Street Deli in West Tampa on Cass Street. Thank you. I see the food running around, Daniel, and everybody looks pretty happy just as they're munching on it here.
You know what? As a native New Yorker, I can say that I officially endorse the pastrami at Cass Street. It's one of the few places in Florida where you can get that nice hand-carved, you know, pastrami like at Katz or Second Avenue Deli. It's very nostalgic for me.
How about that? Sean Canan is on the phone. Sean, this hour we have to hear from 40 people, and actually we've actually heard from a bunch of people, so now we need to hear from 31 more people, and we'll be there. And we've got that match, Sean. If we get five $100 donations, we'll also get an extra $500 from one of our listeners who's challenging. We're going to go back and hear more of the speech by Chris Hedges in a moment, but we're going to thank some people. Jim and Rosemary Tantalo from Sarasota, thanks for your ongoing support, Rosemary. Nice to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Thanks to Susan Lee, made a $100 contribution. Susan's in Tampa and contributing to the Midday Public Affairs. Daniel, what do you got?
Tom Fillion from Tampa also has contributed a pledge of $100. He's a fan of Radioactivity Wednesday. He says that WMNF is a local treasure, so he's aiding our challenge. We also have Joyce Janzak from Palm Harbor, who's also donated a pledge of $100. So I think that puts us within, what, two? We need two more $100 pledges, I think, to meet that challenge.
If we get two more $100 donations, we'll get an extra $500 from two generous listeners. Thanks to Gerardo Bardales from Palm Harbor. And I guess that might be Gerardo Bardales. Anyway, thank you, Gerardo. Thank you for that $10 contribution. 813-238-8001. Sean, in a minute, we're going to go back and hear more of this speech by Chris Hedges. But now, at this point, we need just 28 more calls, and we'll be there.
Yeah, we need to hear from people who are enjoying this speech or who like Radioactivity, that Rob's news and talk show every day that he does interviews with every single morning. We know there's a lot of people call in for that. Well, why don't you call in to show your support for that, and especially showing your support for this excellent speech that we're hearing from Chris Hedges. What a speech this is. If you enjoy programming like this, we'd like to hear your support right now. 813-238-8001. You can make a donation on our secure website at WMNF.org, or you can use the WMNF app and hit the tip jar on that app. But we really do need to hear your support right now.
And as we read these names, these are the names of the people that are keeping WMNF going and on the air. These are the people that are making this little radio station possible and keeping speeches like the Chris Hedges speech on the air. So we're going to go back and hear more of this talk by the former New York Times reporter. He's written about sacrifice zones in the U.S. He went to Immokalee, Florida a few years ago, and Immokalee became part of his book on sacrifice zones. Chris has been a guest here on WMNF. He's also been a guest on Democracy Now! We're going to hear more of this speech. But remember, we need to hear from just two more people donating $100, and we'll get an extra $500 donation from great listeners in Tampa. The number to call, 813-238-8001, or you can make your contribution on our website, WMNF.org. Here's more of that talk from Chris Hedges.
They hold up as sacrosanct biblical passages that buttress their ideology and ignore or grossly misinterpret the ones that do not. They live in a binary universe. They see themselves as eternal victims, oppressed by dark and sinister groups seeking their annihilation. They alone know the will of God. They alone can fulfill God's will. They seek total cultural and political domination. The secular reality-based world, one where Satan, miracles, divine edicts, angels, and magics do not exist, destroyed their lives and their communities. This secular world took away their jobs and their futures. It destroyed the social bonds that gave them purpose, dignity, and hope. In their despair, they often succumbed to alcoholism, drug, gambling, and pornography addictions. They endured familial breakdowns, divorce, jail, evictions, unemployment, and domestic and sexual abuse. And then from the depths of suicidal despair, they suddenly discovered that God has a plan for them. God will save them. God will intervene in their lives to promote and protect them. God has called them to carry out his holy mission in the world and to be rich, powerful, and happy. The only thing that saved them was their conversion, the realization that God had a plan for them and would protect them. These believers were pushed by the wreckage caused by neoliberalism into the arms of charlatans. All who attempt to reach them through the rational language of fact and evidence are hated and ultimately feared, for they seek to force believers back into what they call the culture of death that nearly destroyed them. Trump has handed veto and appointment power over key positions in government, especially in the federal courts, to the Christian right. He has installed 133 district court judges out of 677 total, 50 appeals court judges out of 179 total, and 2 U.S. Supreme Court justices out of 9. Almost all of these justices were vetted by the Federalist Society and the Christian right. Many, have been rated as unqualified by the American Bar Association, the country's largest nonpartisan coalition of lawyers. Trump has moved to ban Muslim immigrants. He has rolled back civil rights legislation. He has made war on reproductive rights by restricting abortion and defunding Planned Parenthood. Trump was the first president to address the radical anti-choice March for Life event in person. He permits discrimination against LGBTQ community people in the name of quote-unquote religious liberty. He has ripped down the firewall between church and state by revoking the Johnson Amendment, which prohibits churches which are tax-exempt from endorsing political candidates. His appointees routinely use biblical strictures to justify an array of policy decisions, including environmental deregulation, tax cuts, and the replacement of public schools with charter schools, an action that permits the transfer of federal education funds to private, quote-unquote, Christian schools. The iconography and language and symbols of American nationalism are intertwined with the iconography, language, and symbols of the Christian faith. Mega pastors who often share Trump's narcissism rule despotic, cult-like fiefdoms. They make millions of dollars by using this heretical belief system to prey on the despair and desperation of their congregations. They distort the Bible to champion unfettered capitalism, the cult of masculinity, the belief that violence can purge the world of evil, white supremacy, bigotry, American chauvinism, religious intolerance, anger, racism, and conspiracy theories. Those within the evangelical movement, such as the editors of the magazine Christianity Today, who have attempted to state the obvious about Trump, that he is corrupt, inept, and immoral, and should be removed from office, are brutally attacked. Nearly 200 evangelical leaders, including former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, former Representative Michelle Bachmann, Jerry Falwell Jr., and Ralph Reed, signed a joint letter denouncing the Christian Today editorial. Evangelical Christians who criticize Trump are as swiftly disappeared as Republican politicians who criticize Trump. Trump received 80% of the white evangelical vote in the 2016 presidential election, and in a poll during the House impeachment proceedings, 90% of evangelicals said they opposed the impeachment and ouster of the president. Among Republicans who identify as white evangelical Protestants, that number rises to 99%. Trump, of course, has no ideology, but his ideological vacuum is being swiftly filled by the Christian right. This Christianized fascism, with its network of megachurches, schools, universities, and law schools, and its vast radio and television empire, is a potent ally for the beleaguered president. The Christian right has been organizing and preparing to take power for decades. It is important to note that modern evangelicals, like modern fundamentalists, bear little resemblance to evangelicals and fundamentalists of a few decades ago. Traditional evangelicals and fundamentalists believe that they should distance and remove themselves from the contaminants of secular society, including politics. But a change took place in the early 1970s with the rise of what we call the Reconstructionist or Dominionist movement, articulated by Roussas Rushduni, the intellectual godfather of the modern Christian right. His 1,600-page, three-volume work, Institutes of Biblical Law, which makes for very turgid reading, argued that American society should be governed according to the biblical precepts in the Ten Commandments. He wrote that the elect, like Adam and Noah, were given dominion over the earth and must subdue the earth along with all non-believers so the Messiah could return. Reconstructionism or dominionism was a radically new interpretation within the evangelical movement. The Messiah, it was traditionally taught, would return in an event called the rapture, where there would be wars and chaos. The non-believers would be tormented and killed. The elect would be lifted to heaven. The rapture, which is not in the Bible, was not something that could be manipulated or influenced, although believers often interpreted catastrophes and wars as portents of the imminent second coming. Rushduni, however, promoted an ideology that advocated violence and the seizure of power to create the Christian state. His ideology was in many ways the mirror image of liberation theology, which came into vogue at about the same time. While the liberation theologians crammed the Bible into the box of Marxism, Rushduni crammed it into the equally distorting box of fascism. I saw this ideological clash as a reporter in the 1980s in Central America. In El Salvador, leftist priests endorsed and in a few cases traveled with the armed rebel movements in Nicaragua and El Salvador. At the same time, the Christian right, led by figures such as Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, along with conservative Latin American pastors and clerics, backed genocidal dictators such as Rios Montt in Guatemala or Augusto Pinochet in Chile. They supported the Contras fighting the Sandinistas in Nicaragua and the brutal military regime in Argentina, which disappeared 30,000 of its own citizens. The Institutes of Biblical Law calls for a society that is harsh, unforgiving, and violent. Offenses such as adultery, witchcraft, blasphemy, and homosexuality merit the death penalty. The death penalty will be expanded to include quote-unquote moral crimes, including apostasy, blasphemy, sodomy, and witchcraft, as well as abortion, which will be treated as murder. Women will be subordinate to men. Those who practice other faiths will become, at best, second-class citizens and eventually outcasts. The wars in the Middle East will be defined as religious crusades against Muslims. There will be no separation of church and state. The attack on quote-unquote failing government schools by Trump in his State of the Union address, when calling for the expansion of school choice vouchers, are words lifted verbatim from the Christian right and Rushduni. The only legitimate voices will be Christian. America will become an agent of God. Those who defy the Christian authorities will be branded as agents of Satan. The world is to be subdued and ruled by a Christian United States. Rushduni, a virulent anti-Semite, dismissed the number of 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust as an inflated figure. His theories on race echo Nazi eugenics. The white man has behind him centuries of Christian culture and the discipline and selective breeding this faith requires, he wrote, the Negro is a product of a racially different past and his heredity has been governed by radically different considerations. The background of Negro culture is African and magic, and the purposes of the magic are control and power over God, man, nature, and society. Voodoo or magic was the religion and life of American Negroes. Voodoo songs underlie jazz, and old voodoo with its power goal has been merely replaced with revolutionary voodoo, a modernized power drive. Rushduni was also deeply antagonistic to the federal government. He believed the federal government should concern itself with little more than national defense. Education and social welfare should be handed over to the churches. Biblical law must replace the secular code. The poor condemned for sloth, indolence, and sinfulness would be denied government assistance. Crimes requiring the death penalty would be expanded.
Well, we're listening to Chris Hedges, who turns out he has a degree in religion. And he's an ordained minister, but Chris Hedges is also one of the best international reporters the U.S. has, and he's been writing a lot about domestic policy recently, and we're hearing his description of what the far-right religious people in this country have in mind for us, and we're hoping that you like this speech and appreciate that WMNF is carrying it, and that you make a phone call right now and say to WMNF, here's a donation to keep this radio station on the air so I can hear ideas and thoughtful people like this, and then go out and do what needs to be done. Make up your own mind and fight for justice in the world. Our phone number is 813-238-8001. You can also make your contribution online at WMNF.org. Hey, Sean, good news. We have reached the match. And
all right,
we've
that's
got
great.
A bunch of people have made $100 contributions. Now we're just about 19 phone calls away from reaching the goal this hour. We've had a bunch of people call in. Carolyn Leonard Guckenheimer from Englewood. Carolyn Leonard, thank you very much. This is in memory of Carol. And so thanks. That's a Circle of Friends donation. Thank you very much for that nice contribution. And I'm sorry to hear about Carol Leonard. Thanks to Anonymous, who is in Tampa, has just made a $25 contribution. Dan Robinson from Tampa has made a $100 contribution, taking the reusable grocery bag. James Dunn from Clearwater made a $100 contribution and says, please, yes, thank you very much, James. Gary Gibbons made a donation from St. Petersburg. Gary, thank you so much. Gary makes a donation every marathon. Thank you for that $100 contribution. Thanks to Anonymous in Plant City, making a $100 contribution. Martin Roberts from Largo has made a $120 contribution. And Patty, thank you, from Bradenton, just made a $25 donation. Marsha Weller and Clint Brown from Tampa made a $100 contribution. They're taking the MNF face mask. They love the Chris Hedges speech about the Christian right, and that encouraged their pledge. So Marsha and Clint, thank you. And thanks to good friends of the station, David Hall and Judy Tampa. Thank you very much for that $500 contribution, David and Judy. Good friends, thank you very much for making a donation to WMNF. So we are very close, Sean. We are just now about 19 phone calls away from reaching the goal, or 19 donations away from reaching the goal this hour. Of course, we've still got the Midpoint program with NOLA. That's coming up in the next hour, so stick around for that. But if you appreciate the Chris Hedges speech, and you appreciate the fact that WMNF takes a chance, puts a speech by this person on the air, and you're not going to hear this on any other radio station, please make that contribution. Keep this voice of free speech alive by calling 813-238-8001.
Yeah, it's so great to hear all of that support, all the people calling in and donating their hard-earned money to keep community radio alive in our community. I think the WMNF is a treasure in the Tampa Bay area, and if you agree, we really do need your support. We rely on listeners like you for 70% of our funds, and if you can make a $10 a month donation, we would love to hear from you. 813-238-8001. If you're a fan of Radioactivity, think about the great interviews that Rob brings us every single weekday morning. The other day he interviewed someone from Catholics for Choice, that it was a perspective that really you don't hear that often. Rob tried to make that point, and she was very diplomatic in not pointing out that hardly ever does she get radio interviews from Christian right radio stations, but we did bring her on. And if this is the kind of things that you want to hear, if you want to hear different perspectives that you might not hear all the time on the mainstream news, give us a call and support that kind of journalism. 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our website, WMNF.org.
Yeah, I think that person was a little suspicious of getting a call from a radio station in the South asking for an interview, and she was all set for somebody to really scream at her and yell at her, and then I let her talk. And she pointed out that surveys show that most Roman Catholics in this country are pro-choice, at least according to the surveys. So we were glad to get her on the air. But let's see if we can get at least a few more phone calls. I see some lines lighting up, so that's good. But let's see if we can get some more donations online. Our website is WMNF.org, and right when you hit the website, you'll find information about how to make that contribution. If you're listening on the phone app, you can use the tip jar on the phone app and make a contribution there. We're just 19 phone calls away from reaching the goal this hour, and we're doing really well. We had just a big, big flurry of support there in the last 15 or 20 minutes. Please call us at 813-238-8001. Sean Canan is on the phone. I'm Rob Lurie, and you're listening to WMNF, and you're listening to the way that WMNF stays on the air. This is the way we do it. We get voluntary contributions from people just like you who make a $10, $20, or $50, or $100, or $1,000 contribution to say, you play such great music, and you have so many interesting talk shows and interview programs and news programs I'm supporting you because you enrich the intellectual life of our community. And if you believe that, and certainly Sean and I believe that, please make that contribution now. 813-238-8001.
If you like the news stories that Daniel's been bringing you, he had the indigenous activists who were calling for the removal of the Statue of Columbus in Tampa the other day that was really popular on our Facebook page. All the stories that Daniel's been covering, if this is important to you, we need to hear your support. 813-238-8001.
Well, Sean, in the next hour, we have to raise $2,000. We hope we can do it, and stick around. We've got the news next, and then Midpoint with NOLA. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Here's the latest news from NPR.
Long-